Court proceeds to the third case of the day, Employers Insurance of Warsaw and Allstate Insurance versus Century Indemnity Company. Mr. Harrison.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Kendall Harrison, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Employers Insurance Company of Warsaw. Arbitration is a matter of contract. That's the central principle of arbitration law, and it's the guiding principle of this case. As with any contract, a court needs to determine what the parties intended and enforce that intent. Unfortunately, the district court lost sight of that principle, which led it to mistakenly rule that arbitrators, rather than the court, should decide whether Century could force Warsaw to participate in a consolidated arbitration involving multiple contracts and all of Century's other reinsurers. The district court had the authority to and should have resolved the consolidation issues itself. Century and Warsaw's contracts in no way establish an intent to have arbitrators decide the consolidation issues. Accordingly, this court should reverse.
You say that the language of the arbitration clause is not as broad as the language that was at issue in the Greentree case. I have been trying to figure out why you think that, because the language here says that any dispute arising out of the agreement shall be submitted to arbitration. And that seems like extremely broad language to me.
Your Honor, it is true that that is what the arbitration agreement says. And it is true that in Greentree, the contracts had language that was somewhat similar to that. However, the difference between our contracts and the contracts at issue in Greentree is the language that Justice Breyer focused on in his plurality decision. What he focused on was the language that all disputes relating to this contract or the relationships which result from this contract was the crucial language. He focused on that language, and his decision is clear that he was focusing on that language. And if you look at the overall context of our agreement, going beyond simply the all disputes language, I think it's clear that the parties in no way intended that consolidation would be decided by the arbitrators, because if they had decided that, they would have given the arbitrators some sort of procedural mechanism by which to make those decisions. There is no way and no rules that the parties included in their arbitration agreement that provides a way for the arbitrators to be able to coordinate consolidation decisions among various panels. Now, there are contracts that have that type of language. In fact, Century cited one at the outset of this dispute when it made its arbitration demand. And what it did is it cited to language that it must have had in one of its other contracts, language that is not at issue in this case. But what that language said was that if there's a dispute that's common among all of Century's reinsurers, all those reinsurers shall be treated as a single party. So there was only going to be one panel under that type of contractual language. Here, as the district court noted and as we argued in front of the district court, what you have is you have a situation where there will be multiple panels set up. I think Century has something like 35 different reinsurers. You have a potential of many, many panels, all who have to be separately constituted, and then who have to make decisions about whether consolidation should occur or not. So take that example for a second and think about the difficulties with how those decisions are going to be coordinated. What happens if one panel makes a decision that says, yes, we think consolidation should occur, and another panel or panels reach contrary conclusions. There is no way to coordinate that.
Is this the argument that you made in your reply brief that suggests that Judge Shabazz ordered two separate arbitrations? Is this the argument you're making now?
I think it's consistent with that argument, Your Honor. There's really two things at issue that we argued both in our brief and in our reply brief. We think that we should not have to participate in consolidated arbitration with all of Century's other reinsurers. That's point one. We also think that we are entitled to separate panels and separate arbitrations for the two specific contracts that we have with Century, the first layer contract and the second layer contract.
Is that clear from Judge Shabazz's order? Because I think you could read his order to provide for just one. And that's evidently how Century reads it, right? And his order seems to envision that Wausau would name a single arbitrator, for example. So wouldn't that tend to lead to Century's conclusion?
I agree with you that Judge Shabazz could have been clearer on that point. But I think if you look at his overall decision and the logic and the rationale of what he was saying, you'll reach the conclusion that we're asking you to reach here, which is that you have to constitute separate panels because each individual contract, each of the two individual contracts that Wausau has with Century are independent contracts that call for the formation of independent arbitration panels.
All right. Help me then with this. There's one question. That question is, does the contract permit a consolidated arbitration? The relevant language of the two contracts is the same. The parties to the two contracts are identical. I don't see why there should be two arbitrations. I don't see it.
Because that is what the parties agreed to. They entered into separate contracts, and they entered into agreements that said that separate arbitration panels will be set up. And it's not simply a matter of whether Wausau has to participate in one or two arbitrations with Century. It's a matter of whether Wausau has to participate in a consolidated arbitration that involves all of Century's other reinsurers. That is not what Wausau bargained for. If it had, there would have been something in the contracts that you would find that evidences that. Now, Century says that, oh, wouldn't this be more convenient to have everybody all together in one arbitration? Well, sure, for Century it would be, but not for Wausau. We don't know what the other defenses are that the other reinsurers are going to raise. That's not a matter that's in the record. And from our perspective, what's efficient is to have the two arbitrations that we agreed to under the two contracts and have the arbitrators focus on the specific issues between Wausau and Century, not on issues that may arise between Century and all of Century's other reinsurers.
The question of consolidation of arbitration is a question of contract interpretation?
I believe it is.
And aren't questions of contract interpretation normally for the arbitrator? If everybody agrees that the dispute is arbitrable, that's as far as a court gets, and we don't go any further. If it's just a question of contract interpretation on arbitration procedure, then the arbitrator decides. That's the import of the Green Tree holding.
I think to the extent that
there is a holding. You're arguing that there isn't, but
I think what your question raises is this distinction that's been discussed a lot in the briefs between substantive questions of arbitrability and procedural questions of arbitrability.
Well, this is a classic procedural question, although I will give you that it's a real big one. And that's something that arbitrators decide, right?
No, I don't think it is a procedural question of arbitration. I will grant you that perhaps consolidation has some procedural aspects to it. But I think that if you're looking from an overall perspective as to whether consolidation should be treated as a substantive question of arbitrability or procedural question of arbitrability, the proper way to look at it is to treat it as a substantive question of arbitrability. And put the terms aside for a second, because I don't think the terms are particularly helpful. I think what we need to be looking at is the party's intent. And although consolidation might have procedural aspects to it, it's really more akin to what the parties agreed to arbitrate. And the reason for that is that one party to a two-party arbitration agreement wouldn't anticipate that another arbitration panel involving different parties would have any control of it.
How do you deal with PEDCOR? How are you going to deal with PEDCOR? You know, that the question of consolidation is not one of gateway matters, that the parties would have expected a court rather than an arbitrator to resolve. PEDCOR is a big problem for you.
I see that I'm entering my rebuttal time, and I'll answer that question and then stop. I think the Fifth Circuit got Greentree wrong in PEDCOR. It is the only court that does a Marx analysis on Greentree, but ultimately it reaches the wrong conclusion. What Greentree stands for and what PEDCOR struggled with but ultimately didn't deal with is what is the significance of Judge Stevens' concurrence in Greentree. And I think if you look at Greentree carefully, and it's a complex decision and this court's going to need to grapple with it, but if you read it carefully, I think you'll come to the conclusion that the narrowest grounds for that decision is simply that the court needs to look at the party's intent in deciding whether the parties wanted a court or an arbitrator to decide consolidation questions.
But one second, Ms. Harrison. Putting aside Greentree, if we could for a moment, and look at Howson, could you tell me how we should view the six-year time limit issue that was involved in Howson and contrast that to what we have here by way of a possible decision by the arbitrator? I mean, affecting procedural versus substantive.
I think Howson is a correct decision. It's the decision of the Supreme Court, so necessarily is correct. But
it's the system we work on.
In Howsam, we're talking about a time limit rule, which is akin to a statute of limitations. That rule was going to be outcome determinative in that case. In other words, if the court had applied that time limit rule, the case would have been over. And what the Supreme Court said was that, look, we shouldn't be making decisions that affect the outcome of the arbitration. And the reason for that is the parties expected arbitrators to be making the decisions that affected the outcome of the arbitration. Here, we're not talking about an outcome determinative sort of decision in terms of the consolidation decisions. Instead, we're talking about whether the parties would have anticipated that consolidation was going to be a question that was decided by the arbitrators and by the court.
But aren't you here today because you do think it's going to impact the outcome, the route that we take one way or the other? Consolidation versus non-single.
Well,
isn't it outcome? It doesn't for a minor matter.
No, of course not. But it doesn't determine the outcome of the case in the same way that the application of a statute of limitations would if an arbitration panel or a court applied it and said, sorry, you're too late.
Could one argue it's not as draconian as what was faced in Howson years?
I think it's just a different issue. And again, you know, this is why consolidation, I think, is a bit difficult to figure out. It has some procedural aspects. I think it also has some substantive aspects. And I think what the appropriate presumption is and the way that the court should treat it is more like substantive than procedural. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Mr. Phillips.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Judge Flom, I'd like to start with your question because it seems to me that counsel for the other side essentially argued this precisely the opposite of, at least if I'd been in his shoes, what I would have said, because essentially what he just told you is Howsam, although the Court characterized its decision as involving purely a procedural issue, actually looks very much like a substantive issue, at least as it might arise in a standard sort of Rules of Decision Act analysis in a diversity case. I would have thought from that you would say a fortiori the question of consolidation is a purely procedural issue, and therefore under Howsam, regardless of what you want to say about Greentree, that Howsam tells you if it's an arguably procedural rule and consolidation is clearly that, then the right answer is that that's an issue for the arbitrator in the first instance. And there is really no difference of opinion between us with respect to does this case turn on contract interpretation? Of course, all arbitration turns on contract interpretation, but there's no way to distinguish the all disputes language and the special emphasis that Justice Breyer's plurality opinion put on the word all, not on the relationships among the parties. It's the word all that he identified as the significant portion of that contract, with the language in this contract which says any dispute arising out of this contract. And it seems to me that this is clearly a dispute that arises out of this contract. And how do you resolve that dispute? You look to the customs and usages of insurance and reinsurance. That's where the arbitrators are told to look. Judge Roedner, with respect to what the district court ordered in this case, it seems to me quite clear that the district court ordered the other side to pick an arbitrator. And the language here is worth taking at least a second to focus on. Well, I don't know that it'll require more than a second. Because in its order, it specifically discusses, and this is on page 09 of the appendix to the appellant's brief, and it is further ordered clause where it says, defendant proceed to arbitration with plaintiff employers in accordance with the terms of their agreements, all right, two agreements, and Wausau shall appoint its arbitrator, one arbitrator. I don't think that's an accident. It seems to me quite clear what the district court did here. And what we're asking this court to do is essentially simply to affirm across the board and to go forward with the arbitration. And if you do that, then all of the parade of horribles and all of the difficulties that the other side creates or hypotheticals that it attempts to create as to how you would proceed in arbitration in the face of all of these potential claims and everything that goes on, essentially just get wiped away, because you have the first arbitrator, you have the first arbitration panel. It will decide how the rest of the matters ought to proceed. And if it turns out that it makes a mistake or there's a fundamental error or any problem or whatever, it'll be available to the other side to come back to court at the end of the process. But the Supreme Court told you in Randolph and the other Greentree case, you don't predict, you don't anticipate problems and thereby interfere with the arbitral process. What you do is you recognize that the arbitral process is what's been called for by the parties, send the matter to arbitration, and allow the arbitrators to do the best they can under these particular circumstances.
Judge Shabazz held that the question of consolidation was a question for the arbitrators in the first instance, not a question for the court. But then he ordered, and I would have thought flowing from that determination would be a single arbitration with Wausau and Allstate, and then the consolidation question would be addressed to that panel with the potential that those arbitrations might be split if the arbitrator decided that the arbitration clause didn't warrant consolidation. Instead, he ordered two arbitrations,
right,
as I see it, one with Allstate and one with Wausau, and that seems to me to be inherently contradictory to the determination that he made that consolidation is an issue for the arbitrator. And so we start with the presumption that one panel to arbitrate this entire dispute would be chosen, and then the question of whether they should be separated would be addressed to that panel. Can you shed some light on that?
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I think the right answer, and certainly the argument that we made to the district court, was that these ought to be resolved in a single proceeding, if at all possible, or at least the threshold question of whether you were going to have one or potentially 70 arbitrations ought to be decided by the initial panel. The district court interpreted the contracts as not providing for that particular procedure. We've settled with Allstate in order to eliminate the complications that might otherwise arise. But, you know, from my perspective, you're absolutely right, and it would have been a serious argument as to whether they would have made a mistake going down that path. But you know, that's fallen out at this point.
The springboard for his decision there was the way in which each arbitration clause referred to the signing party,
right,
which he said varied from contract to contract. Isn't that it?
That's the basis for his decision, although,
that's why I'm wondering why you're conceding here.
I don't know that I am. I didn't think I was conceding. I mean, my view was that he got it wrong. But it's irrelevant because we settled with Allstate, and so I don't have to fight that fight at this point. But yeah, no, obviously, from our perspective, all of these issues are best handled in the first instance by the initial arbitral panel, and then you go from there. And it may be that it'll be the 70 panel mess. Maybe that's what custom and usage and reinsurance calls for. And certainly the other side would have a full and fair opportunity to present that issue. But as it comes to this court, the only question at this stage now is whether this specific two agreements or two portions of the excess liability coverage should be submitted to a single arbitrator and arbitration panel, and whether that panel then should decide how best to proceed. And on that score, it seems to me that Greentree tells you the right answer. Frankly, I think even without Greentree, Housen would tell you the right answer. And for this court to go the other way, it would at a minimum have to create a conflict with PEDCOR, because the Fifth Circuit has quite plainly held that Greentree requires the outcome that the district court adopted in this particular case. You know, the Fourth Circuit recently said that our purpose of arbitration, obviously, is to save time and money, and that the procedures in that particular case clearly did not accomplish that. And candidly, that's been true in this case as well. And I would urge the court to affirm, and hopefully affirm quickly, so that we can move this process along. If there are no further questions, I'll give you back the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Harrison.
Your Honors, it appears to me that Century acknowledges that there are going to be large-scale practical problems that may very well arise down the road here. What they say is simply, we don't have to worry about that at this point because we'll clean that up all down the road, and that what we really need to have happen here is the first arbitration panel just making all the decisions. I think that's the wrong approach to take for a couple reasons. One, Wausau did not agree to allow another arbitration panel involving arbitrators that were not of its selection to make decisions about how its arbitrations with Century would proceed. And that's what would happen if you had the first panel deciding. Then if you have the first panel deciding, unfortunately, you have no way to force the second, third, or fourth panels to follow that decision. There's just no sort of res judicata principles that apply in arbitration like you have in the courts. That's why courts should be determining these things as a matter of first instance.
As a matter of first instance, though, shouldn't the contracts have been written more narrowly? I mean, isn't that the first instance that we come to here? When you say any dispute arising out of this agreement, I mean, how can that be read anyway, but broadly?
I see that my time is over.
If I may briefly finish. You have time to respond.
Thank you. Again, Your Honor, I agree that there is the any dispute language in there. But I think, as with any contract, you can't focus only on certain words in the contract, but rather you have to treat it as a whole. And when you look at the contract and you see that there is no way that the parties set up to be able to consolidate, to coordinate decisions between arbitration panels that will be set up in separate instances, I think the conclusion that you reach from that is that the parties did not intend for arbitrators to decide questions of consolidation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Thanks to all counsel. And the case is taken under advisement.